The whole world is in constant chaos, from a worldwide pandemic to economic strain, wars, and mass violence. It's no surprise that mental health conditions are on the rise.
So how have college students been impacted, and what can we do to help? We'll discuss this today on Real Family Talk. Join us. Today on Real Family Talk, we are discussing mental health and college students. We will explore how students are coping with the constant disarray and mayhem of our world.
According to the American Psychological Association, more than 60% of college students met the criteria for at least one mental health problem during the 2020-2021 school year. In a recent national survey, the American College Health Association also found that almost three-quarters of students reported moderate or severe psychological distress. Dr. Alina Baltasar is a therapist and a researcher working directly with college students. She joins us today to share her research findings as we discuss this important topic. Welcome, Dr. Baltasar, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
So tell us, Dr. Baltasar, you've done extensive research in the area of college students and mental health. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role in this area.
So as you said, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I've been doing psychotherapy for 18 years now, but also I'm a mom. I have three young adult sons, and so I think what got me into this is my kids were entering into their adolescent years, and I was working on my PhD in human development and family studies and really decided to focus in this area to prepare me for what was to come with my children. And in the work that I do as a professor in the School of Social Work at Andrews University, I wanted to better understand my students. And so we've done some work here on campus with a research that we do doing surveys every 5 to 7 years. The last time we did it was in 2018. And then next time we're doing it next spring. So our research wasn't conducted during the pandemic. So the information that I'm going to share was pre-pandemic, but you know what? The mental health struggles is not new. It is not because of the pandemic. Obviously, there's things that are going on in the world before the pandemic. So this is a real concern. And so we want to better understand it so we can help our students, but also so I can better understand and help my children.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that wonderful introduction. You know, we would like to hear a little bit more about your research and findings from working with college students.
So as I said, the last time we did research here on Andrews University campus was spring of 2018. But then in the fall of that same year, once we saw some of the statistics, I did some qualitative interviews, focus interviews with those students. And what we found, as I said, even before the pandemic, as you mentioned, depression, anxiety were quite high. So for our students, it was about 25% were depressed, about 20% were anxious, which is actually half of the national rate. So it is a real challenge even for our campus students. And there are some things that we found in following up with the students. And some of the things that they say is they are aware that counseling is available. You know, college campuses are really good about providing that services. I think all of our campuses, public, you know, secular, private, Christian, they're all really good about it. And they're aware of mental health. So I think we're doing really good with offering services, helping them to be aware, but there's still the stigma. There's still the embarrassment or admitting you even have a problem or you need help. So that's kind of where they're at with that. But when I ask them, well, why is it that they seem to be struggling and they're stressed? I mean, what college student isn't stressed? But what's new? I think all of us who've been to college, I think we understand that stress, but why are they so depressed? And they have unique challenges we didn't have when we were in college. You know, some of you who are older are parents, they're having to manage things that we never had to manage, like social media presence, multiple social media accounts. And then the other thing that they're dealing with is again, previous generations felt some pressure to go to college, but they don't really feel prepared. And part of the reason they're not feeling prepared is they're being pushed to make school their job. And when we push them to make that their job, so they're not working, now maybe we push extracurriculars, and that is good, but they're not really out there doing things that they want to do, that they enjoy, that they figure out what they want in life. So sometimes they're choosing careers that they think is the logical thing, but it may not be something that their heart is into. So they're struggling with motivation. And the pandemic made it worse because they were then isolated and they weren't able out to get out there and actually try things and socialize and get to know themselves and what they want. So now since the pandemic, they're really struggling with learning, especially if they're online. So they're not as motivated. They're not socializing as much. They're less engaged. So there's some unique challenges that we had to begin with before the pandemic. And now after the pandemic, they're feeling even more isolated and more unprepared for college. And then now we actually did research with some high school seniors last year in our immediate area. And this is just our local public schools in southwestern lower Michigan. And I'm sure any number of seniors are experiencing the same thing because we found research to support that, that not only are they feeling unprepared, but they also are very concerned about debt. So if they're going to college and they don't know what they want, don't know who they are, they are then in more and more of them have to take on loans because, as we know, the cost has gone up and up and up. Student loans are still available. But here they are taking out student loans and knowing that or feeling pressured to go to college. But they're worried, am I going to have to switch majors multiple times? Am I going to graduate with tons of debt? And then am I actually going to use that degree?
Wow.
So let's take a degree in like English because they want to be a writer, but do they really need a degree to be a writer? Or are they going to be successful?
Well, Alina,
so that's another unique thing.
Let me ask you something. Thank you so much. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to piggyback on that because there's some recurring themes in there about their being unprepared. They feel like they're being pushed into doing majors that they might not necessarily be passionate about or interested in, and then they're worried about debt. So how is that different, though, than what students may have dealt with 20 years ago? Do you think that the online presence compounds these issues? Because some of these issues are similar, but they just seem more intense than perhaps they were 20, 30 years ago.
What I'm seeing is, again, social media is making people think and they're comparing themselves to people online, thinking they're having their best life. And that's not reality. No one is having these wonderful lives. Everybody's struggling. So there's that you're comparing yourself. That's one thing that's unique. And then, as I said, college debt is higher than it has been 20, 30 years ago. The interest, you know, the tuition rate has gone up at a much higher rate than in inflation. So there's that. And then people are, because of the online learning, they're less, you know, think about it. When we went to college, part of the joy of college was socializing, being with our friends. And during that period where they were doing online learning, and some are still doing online learning, we have some of our students who are still Zooming into our live classroom that we're phasing that out. So you don't have that engagement with your classmates to kind of encourage you to do well or encourage you or comparing yourself to your classmates. I mean, I've always found that whenever I have students give a presentation, they all get that one done on time. But when it's a homework assignment that the other ones don't know whether or not they did it, there's some that really struggle with motivation to get it done.
Right. So that's really important for us to think about, you know, these comparisons that students are making and the influence of social media and the isolation is what I hear you saying, that they're being isolated. When we return, we'll continue talking with Dr. Alina Baltazar as we continue to discuss this important and relevant topic of mental health and college students. Stay with us.
Today on Real Family Talk, we are talking with Dr. Alina Baltazar as we explore the challenges college students face and the impact it has on their mental health.
So it's no secret that college students today juggle a wide array of challenges, from coursework, friendships, and adjustment to campus life, to economic strain, mass violence, and various forms of loss related to COVID-19. Dr. Baltazar, you've been sharing with us on some of these issues pre-COVID and now after COVID, and you've shared some of your research. Do you mind sharing more, perhaps along the lines of some testimonials that you've had from your qualitative research with these students?
So my most recent qualitative research has actually been with high school students who are preparing for college. We did that just a year ago, so that was during the pandemic. And some of the things that I heard is stories of people with older siblings who went to college and got a degree and never used it, or got into a lot of debt and then turned out they actually didn't need a college degree. Or they change multiple majors, and or stories of, again, their older friends that they didn't feel prepared. I think we've all heard of the term adulting.
Yes.
And that's where they really struggle with being able to, at least they think. See, this is kind of my opinion about it. I think they overthink. I think we've all kind of noticed this generation overthink.
I totally agree. You know, I'm always saying adulting is not a verb. It's actually a noun. You are an adult. Yeah. There's no such thing as adulting, but I get it. So it seems like they have more pressures. They're thinking more. And again, do you believe that it might be some of the comparisons, the influence from social media and feeling inadequate? Are you hearing any of that from your students, from your research?
Well, I would say it's more from the research because they don't want to admit it. They love social media, and they have typically multiple different apps. That's one question I want to ask on our survey in the spring. How many social media apps do you have? Because I think the more you have, I think the worse it's for you, more stress to juggle them, mm-hmm. but also more people to compare yourself to. So I think some of it isn't just the environment. I think it's just how we perceive ourselves and compare ourselves. Because like you said, adulting is just something that you do. And I think, again, they're overthinking, they're not feel confident. But I think there are some mistakes that we have made as parents, this whole idea of school is your job and not really encouraging them to get out there and make mistakes. I know, again, I have young adult children. I've been afraid of them making mistakes. But I had a conversation with one of my children last night to prepare for this. And there's some things, well, you know, when I was raised, I'm like, oh, I guess I did make some mistakes of pushing them too hard or maybe isolating them or sheltering them too much. So I know these are kind of unique things that we need to be careful as parents in preparing our children for the adult life.
So what do you think made the biggest positive impact in the lives of these students? I mean, we've been talking about lots of things and you have lots to share. And we're wondering, what would you say is the biggest impact on their perspective and on what they're thinking?
So I think what we can do to counteract social media is real relationships with adults. So one thing we have found in our research that having a mentor is really important for mental health, for especially those, and actually the pandemic was actually very challenging for certain groups. So the at-risk groups who were already at risk before the pandemic, their condition worsened even more. I mean, there's some young adults and college students who did just fine. There's no statistically significant difference between their mental health or how they did in school, but at-risk youth did worse than usual, right? So it's those mentorships that are so important for, again, at-risk students, but really every young adult benefits from a mentor and just feeling heard. One thing that I was told by my son is that a lot of people that, you know, he talked to is they feel no one listens to them. They're being pushed into college. They're being pushed into majors. They're being pushed to not do certain things. They're not feeling heard. They're not feeling supported. And that's parents are making that mistake. Teachers are making that mistake. And it's those of you who do have a good skill in reaching out and connecting with young adults. They need you and they benefit from your perspective. And of course, all of us could do better in being more engaged with them and listening to them and understand the struggles that they're going through and not just kind of pushing our values and our life perspective on them.
So what I'm hearing you say really is that much better than just being artificially communicated with by apps or on social media, that these young adults, these college students, really need a live person, someone they're connecting with, someone who can give them some direction, but more than anything else, someone who is willing to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want to be heard and respected. That's the other thing that's kind of unique with this generation. They don't want to earn respect. They just think you should respect them because they are knowledgeable. They do know things that some of us who are older, like, you know, come on, technology. How many of us hand a young person our phone to be like, okay, help me with this? So they do have some knowledge, and I think a certain amount of respect is important from their perspective. And because of that expected respect on their part, that is partly why they want to feel heard. And again, they know more about their life experiences than we do. Of course, there's also a maturity that we bring. Again, that whole idea of, you know, them thinking they're not prepared. In reality, they probably are more prepared. That's the maturity and the perspective. A mentorship or relationship with someone who's older can help them.
Yeah. And so I can see where there's a little bit of a gender gap, right? Because people from the boomers who are now raising college students.
Did you say gender gap, or did you mean?
Sorry, not gender gap, age gap. Generation gap.
Generation gap. There we go.
So we have like the boomers and the even Gen Xers who are now raising millennials and Gen Zs. And so what you're saying about the respect, how we view respect, we think you earn respect, and they're thinking we should just be respected because we're human beings. And so I think it's just so important what you've said, and hopefully our parents, our viewers who are listening, people who work with college students and even small children need to understand that just by listening to someone, you're showing respect. And everyone deserves the right to be listened to. And so perhaps we need a change of definition in how we think of respect, because I think it's so important what you've shared and how we can help that positive impact that we're talking about, how we can positively impact this generation. What else would you say we can do to have a more positive impact on them?
I really like what you said about the respect thing, because I think, like you said, older generations are like, what? And it's not, again, about them getting their way. It really is feeling heard. And by them feeling heard, that is to them a sign of respect. So not only do they want to be heard, but they want us to communicate to them in a clear, consistent way. So one thing I've noticed in working with families, that teenagers don't really always think like adults, and adults don't always think like teenagers. I like to call it teen logic and parent logic. Okay. Yes. So we do think differently. I've definitely noticed that. And I feel like as a therapist, I'm an interpreter for both sides.
That's right.
So we need to understand that we do communicate differently, but if we're clear and consistent, you're more likely to feel understood and heard when the adult or a parent is speaking to their young adult or adolescent child.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is that we need to become multilingual. And the reality is, this is true for all relationships. You know, we speak in different ways. And you've said a mouthful, and very important information that you've shared with our audience. We'll talk more with Dr. Alina Baltazar when we return after a short break. Stay with us.
We're back on Real Family Talk, delving into the experiences of college students in regard to their mental health in today's world. Mental health expert Dr. Alina Baltazar has been leading the conversation as she shares her research and experiences working with college students as well as with her own sons.
In 2020, the world as we knew it was shattered and shaken as COVID-19 made its catastrophic debut. Millions of lives were lost, families and friends were separated, jobs became a luxury, and life as we knew it changed. Unsurprisingly, mental health disorders rose at tremendous rates as people tried to grapple with their new reality.
We can be sure that college campuses and its students were affected by these unprecedented changes. Dr. Baltazar, continue to tell us more about some of these changes that you've seen, especially in regards to the impact it's had on learning with our students, college students, or some of the high school students that you've been working with.
Well, what I've seen also in research, not only as a professor and a mom of this age, is when they're doing the online learning, they were less engaged. It was easier. My son was a junior at the time, and he says, wow, that was the easiest semester I've ever had, that first semester when everybody went online. But it impacted their actual learning. And so research has found, on average, elementary students are about 6 months behind. So it'll take them 6 months to catch up. And then, of course, with high school students, that makes them feel less prepared for college then. So that's kind of what they were already, as I said, worried that they weren't really prepared. And now there is even more of a reality of being less prepared. And so that's then that leads to then self-esteem issues and fear and self-confidence. It kind of leads into that mental health aspect, the education component. Then, there, of course, there's the isolation component and the depression that it led to, just because we as humans were meant to connect.
Right. So I can see then how if you're battling mental health issues and all of these other areas that I keep hearing you say, the isolation, you know, feeling unprepared can really lead to mental health issues. So I think we should probably talk a little bit more about these mental health issues.
Battling mental health disorders is often an uphill battle. It's important to handle these situations at the first sign of distress. Parents and teachers play an essential role in helping students learn to talk about mental health-related concerns and get help from the onset. What general tips can you share with our viewers on how to recognize signs or help someone that has expressed needing additional support?
So one of the things we recommend is just to pay attention to changes. So, I mean, all teenagers do have a tendency to isolate a little more. They're less talkative with their parents. They talk more with their parents. I mean, with their peers. That's pretty normal. But if they just withdraw, where you can't really get much of a response from them, they're kind of a flat affect. So just kind of a flat face. And also, if you notice they're not cleaning their room or they're not taking care of themselves, or if their grades go down, that's another big indicator. Actually, us as professors, we notice when students don't hand in their work, they're not responding when we try to reach out to them. That's often a sign there is possibly a struggle. And like you said, it's better to acknowledge and see it earlier as opposed to later, because suicide is a real concern with that generation. That's the other thing that's increased, not only depression and anxiety, but suicide has also gone up during this time as well.
Yeah, suicide has really risen with not just teens, but even younger children. So as you're sharing with us how we can recognize these signs, because, you know, I would think that your teenager might push back and say, well, Mom, you know that, you know, I'm not good at cleaning my room. You don't have to worry about it. I'm fine. This is just how teenagers behave. How do parents or teachers push past what we would call resistance?
Well, actually, what helps is just to name it. So to name, you know, when people act this way, it often means there is maybe some depression or maybe some real struggles. And then for parents to talk about, you know, when I was your age, I had some struggles, and these are the things that I did to help me through them. But, you know, you're dealing with things I never had to deal with, and it's okay to get professional help. It's okay to even consider medications if the symptoms are severe where it's impacting their functioning. So to normalize it, to talk about it, to name it, and talk about how you've coped are some of the things that do help in these situations when they're resistance.
That is amazing. And again, I see how that feeds into respect of your child, your student, that they may feel respected and heard. You know, there's just so much more that we can say on this topic. And we just want to thank you, Dr. Baltazar, for being with us, sharing with us today. And hopefully you'll come back and share more once you've done your new study.
And thank you for being with us again. You know, in the book of Hebrews, chapter 4, verse 16, the Bible says, "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." We encourage you to support those around you that may be struggling with mental health conditions as you draw them to the one who promises to sustain us with his grace.
Thank you for watching Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.